All right, welcome. It is Nazzy from the Pulse of New Hampshire. Time once again for Northeast Delta Dental Radio with the guy who was voted best hair, best dad, fastest runner, best dresser, looks the best in lime green, the second place baseball player for the Red Sox. I always mess that one up.
Eddie Popowski.
Thank you, Eddie Popowski. It's the world famous, longest running talk show host in the Pulse history. It is Mr. Tom Raffio. And of course, award-winning author, too. We cannot leave that part out. That's huge.
Well, Nazzy, let's start with that. Well, first of all, I want to give you a shout out because I get more comments on the radio show now using your new technology.
Well, thank you.
And they also love the introduction. So thank you. And as far as the book, it's being used as a handbook for the next crisis, which may be cybersecurity, maybe another pandemic, who knows? And you can pick it up both at the Bookery and at Gibson's. And it's called Prepare for Crisis, Plan to Thrive. And yes, it kind of recites what we accomplished during the pandemic, including giving back $27 million to the community. But it's also looking forward to help you prepare for the next potential crisis, which in my humble opinion will probably be cyber related. So
it could be. And you know, it's a great play-by-play book too for the largest of companies to the smallest of local mom and pop companies. It's a
exactly great, and that's great what people, and I always cite this example. The proprietor of Dancing Lion Chocolate, they have like 3 or 4 employees right on Elm Street in Manchester, actually not too far from the Bookery. And he uses this book, he uses the Baldrige framework. So whether you have 3 employees or 250 like us, it works. And one of the things, Nazzy, we did during the pandemic was to continue our commitment to the community. We gave back $500,000. We, right before the pandemic hit, we had doled out that money and we called all those nonprofits and those organizations and said, keep the money, keep it in a way so that you'll keep your organization up and running. So that's a nice segue to today's guest, Robert Perreault, who is the expert on New England Franco-American and is a current member of St. A's faculty in modern languages. Robert, thank you for joining me this weekend and live now on Facebook.
I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. And St. A's, of course, is one of my favorite colleges and universities. I was just recently there on one of the committees having to do with ethics. We've had road races there. My mother-in-law was a nursing professor there for many, many years. And it's just a great local college. So tell us about your background in modern languages and specifically what led you to become a Franco-American expert.
Well, first of all, I'm a Franco-American. So let's start with that.
That helps, right?
It does. And I was raised in the 1950s and 60s in the days when people were still speaking French in Manchester and other places, obviously, around New England, cities like Lowell and Lewiston, Maine, Woonsocket, Rhode Island, places like that. And we had a lot of different institutions. We had in Manchester 8 Franco-American parishes with parochial schools. And in those days, kids were expected to show up at school at age 6, able to speak both French and English. And so we were there to learn how to read and write the 2 languages that we were supposed to know. And we, we had families like grandparents and uncles and aunts who all spoke French. And so I grew up in that particular ethnic group. And it just so happened that my grandfather and my uncle were both presidents at one time or another of the ACA. That was the Association Canado-Américaine, which was a fraternal life insurance society in Manchester. The headquarters were in Manchester, but they had, being fraternal and all, they had local lodges all over New England and all over Quebec as well.
Into Canada, correct, because we were thinking of partnering.
I grew up in this atmosphere, and for me, it was easy. I did very well in French class. Some of the kids in class in their families didn't speak French as much as in my family, for example. And it's funny because nowadays I get together with some of my grammar school friends, and they all say, you know, we knew, we're not surprised that you're involved in Franco-American culture and all, because you were always so good in French class and all, and you really liked it. And so it makes sense.
Très bien. So I also grew up in the 60s, and in those days, I'm not French, but in those days, you were taught French, not Spanish. A lot of schools now, the sort of the second language is Spanish or other languages, but I basically took French from 7th grade through 12th grade, and I even took it 2 years through Harvard, because I was really into French literature. So it's great. And I know the West Side, one of my mentors is Dr. Silvio Dupuy, and so the West Side of Manchester is...
He was my eye doctor as a little kid.
Really? Oh my God, that is crazy.
Right.
And he, of course, was an eye doctor and has done many, many things, including being the mayor of Manchester, and including being the commissioner of the Department of Insurance, including being the head of a law firm. The list is endless of what Silvio has done. And actually, there'll be a recognition for Dr. Dupuy coming up. So that's great background. So if you were to describe today, who are the Franco-Americans? You know, can you answer that question?
Yeah, the Franco-Americans are descendants of the French Canadians who came down here from Canada to work in the textile mills and the shoe factories and the logging camps and whatever jobs they could have, because things up in French Canada weren't going so well. This is in the 19th century and early 20th century. In fact, between 1840 and 1930, close to 1 million French Canadians came down here to New England, to the various industrial cities like Manchester.
Interesting.
So that's who we are, the Franco-Americans.
And I'm pretty familiar. Dr. Michel Corray, Mitch Corray, I call him, has worked with me for 27 years at Northeast Delta Dental. Great dentist, speaks fluent French. And I'm familiar with the insurance company that you referenced, because I actually sent him up to Quebec to do some research. And after about a very expensive French dinner, we came back after the research. Now, this, in kind of preparing for today's interview, I hadn't realized that maybe there's a perspective that Franco-Americans are not that well known outside of New England. Is that true? And if so, why is that the case?
Yeah, that is absolutely true. Everywhere I go, whenever I speak French, people look at me like, whoa, you're an American and you speak French? How come? But you don't speak like Parisian French and all that. Well, we're not known because we're a kind of group that for some reason we're humble. I can remember the nuns always telling us in school, you know, let other people praise you for whatever you do. Don't do it yourself. And so I guess we tend to, we do good things, but we keep it to ourselves, and we're kind of I wouldn't say a closed society. We're a private society. We don't yell out a lot. We don't protest a lot. And I give one example during the strike of 1922 in the Amiskeag Mills. For 9 months, the Amiskeag Mills in Manchester were on strike, and it was very difficult to get Franco-Americans to join in that. It was just one of those things. And I can remember the nuns telling us, if you don't like something, well, pray that it changes. And if it doesn't change, then offer it up to God, and someday you'll be in heaven and everything will be cool. So that's kind of the type of people we've become, to the point where there are Franco-Americans who don't even realize that they're Franco-Americans. I have students who come in to my classes and I pronounce their name in French, and they look at me like I'm from another planet, and they just don't seem to know much about their own culture.
Wow. So that sort of humbleness can work to their disadvantage. Although I like that expression, what you're talking about reminds me of what Bill Belichick once said. When you win, say little, and when you lose, say less. So I like that sort of humble approach. So did you sort of then, knowing this kind of humbleness and lack of recognition outside of these pockets like the West Side and Woonsocket, et cetera, and Lewiston, did you kind of make it your sort of passion to teach it and get the word out? Was that part of it?
That's part of it, yes. To Franco-Americans themselves, so that they know about their own culture, and to the outsiders as well. Because unfortunately, those who do know us, for years, we were kind of known as, unfortunately, stupid frogs or dumb Canucks, for whatever reason. I really don't know, because we're not any, I don't think we're any smarter or any less smart than others, but it was just one of those things that we were labeled that way. And, you know, I can remember in high school, you know, people would say to me, oh, because I grew up on the East Side in a mixed neighborhood, and I was told, you know, did you bring your passport to get on the, you know, because they assumed I lived on the West Side or whatever, or did you jump across the river because you're a frog, that kind of stuff.
You know, Nazzy, I see you're here.
It's
amazing that some things, you know, we move forward as society, but you know, some of the issues that Robert is talking about with regard to Franco-Americans, you know, the 50s, 60s, and 70s, we're still dealing with that, maybe with another group or two, but it's just, it's really, I'm really glad we're on, you know, we're on this show today to explain that. And one of the initiatives I'm working on is something called the Sunshine Initiative, and we really actually want to get the old and new West Side story out there, not the play, but the West Side of Manchester. So Nazzy, should we take a little break?
Yeah, let's take a quick breather, and then we'll come back and we'll hear more with Robert. This is very interesting to me. I'll tell you why in just a moment. We'll be back right in just a few on the Pulse of New Hampshire. Welcome back. It is Nazzy from the Pulse of New Hampshire, Northeast Delta Dental Radio, Mr. Tom Raffio, the CEO and president of Northeast Delta Dental as well. And this is very interesting to me, guys, because I am married to a French Canadian, her maiden name, Arsenault. And this is, you're speaking about her family heritage and how they came to this area. And I didn't realize all that Robert is saying. About the history of the Franco-American people in this state, you know.
And you may not even pronounce her last name correctly, probably.
That story. It is Arsenault. It's like Perro. My name in French is Perro, and you don't pronounce the LT. So
there you go, Nazzy. Weren't you listening to that?
I did. I liked that. I heard that. And so I can say it one more time, Robert. Say it again. How do I pronounce?
Arsenault.
Arsenault.
And I can add to that even more, because I said Franco-Americans come from French Canadians, but French Canadians themselves, there are two groups. There are the Quebecois and there are the Acadians. And the Acadians, and Arsenault is an Acadian name, they were from Acadia or Acadie in French, which was New Brunswick, Nova Scotia, Prince Edward Island, parts of the Gaspé Peninsula, and even northern Maine. So that whole area was Acadie.
And she does have family from Prince Edward Island. She does have family that lives there.
Well, see, I there you go. I got it right.
You did, right on the nose. I'll let you guys continue. That was good.
So now, this is a good segue into a couple of questions I have. So given, I know your role is to document and get it out there, but what do you think is the future of Franco-Americans as an ethnic group if, because of their humbleness and, you know, whatever, a lack of notoriety, they don't, some, as you mentioned, some don't even know how to pronounce their own names, the way you would. What do you think is the future of the ethnic group?
Well, as with all ethnic groups, I think in the United States, the Franco-Americans, I think we, with every generation, we put a little bit more American or English, if you want, water in our French wine. So it's going down, But I mean, we're still there, and there are still many people who don't speak French, but who are nevertheless interested in their culture. And that's part of my work, is that I'm from a generation that I can write in French and I can write in English. And in the older generations, like my grandfather and my uncle, the ones who were presidents of the ACA, they were writers as well and journalists, and they wrote exclusively in French. I can write in both languages, and so that's why I use the English language to try to communicate with Franco-Americans who don't speak and write or read French. So this way they can learn about their own culture. And when you learn about your culture, you start to celebrate it. And we have people who are interested in their, you know, their family tree, doing their genealogy. We have genealogical societies like the American Canadian Genealogical Society. We have the Franco-American Center in Manchester, which operates in both languages, but, you know, quite a few of our members don't speak French, and so there's a, but they celebrate their culture. But you got to know about your culture so you know what to celebrate. And so that's, I think we'll always be around, but we may not be the same way that people in my generation and before that were. When you could walk on Elm Street in Manchester and hear French spoken, you could go into restaurants, you could go all over the place, in stores, grocery stores, wherever, and you'd hear French spoken. You don't have that anymore. So we're not as easily identifiable. You know, we're white, first of all, so we look like everyone else. So
great. So would you, since you mentioned the Franco-American Center, why don't you talk about that as a resource in Manchester? And what it is, how you're using it to promote the culture, and do you need funding for it?
Well, I'm an incorporator of the Franco-American Center, so I'm not speaking as the director or as the president. So I'm just speaking on my own here.
Correct.
They've been around since 1990. We're located now on the campus of St. Anselm College. There are various activities. There are French classes for adults and children. There are activities, social activities, parties, and for example, the big Putin Fest that they do every year now that attracts 1,000 people. We have a monthly gathering. In fact, we just started getting together in person again after having been on Zoom for a couple of years during the pandemic, called Prêt à Parler, like Prêt à Porter for clothes. Prêt à Parler, meaning ready to speak.
Yeah.
And people who just want to speak French and at any level. And we get together, and it's a fun time. Nobody's going to criticize you if you make a mistake. They'll help you and whatnot. And activities like that. You know, we have an Acadian Day. We have other days like that, Christmas party, whatnot. So
can people just drop by, or they become members? And where is it located exactly?
Well, like I said, it's on the campus of St. Anselm College, but there is a website.
But specifically where? Because anytime I go into St. A's campus, I always drive in circles looking for things.
Yeah. Well, I know exactly what you mean. Yes. At present, they're located in the hockey arena.
Perfect. Well, that's easy to find. So my listening audience, like, if you know where the hockey arena, that's probably one of the most easiest thing to find on the St. A's campus.
Yeah.
That's cool. So is it growing as word gets out? I think that's the purpose of this show, too. My good friend and former VP of HR, Connie Roy-Jakowski, said you're really enjoy speaking with Robert. Of course, she's French, Carnivois. So is the word getting out, and are more and more people showing up, particularly now that
I think little by little, and what I'm noticing, which I didn't notice in the past, you know, I just turned 71 last week.
Oh, you look great for 71. Jeez.
Thank you. But what I'm noticing is that I used to always be the young one at group, at whatever gatherings. And I'm 71, and there are many young ones coming into the Franco-American Center. In fact, we have even that prêt-à-parler that I talked about. We right. have another session as well as the teenage prêt-à-parler, young people wow. who are studying French in school, and they get together and speak like that as well. So little by little, Franco-Americans who are much younger than I are coming. And that's something we never had seen in the past. Tired of always being the youngest one all the time.
Yeah. But, so you think there's a little renaissance here in terms of bringing the culture back?
It's hard to say, really. We were thinking maybe there was a renaissance back in the 1970s during the U.S. Bicentennial, when a lot of people were focusing on their ethnic background and on history in general. And nowadays people are saying, well, it was nice while it lasted, but you know, there wasn't much, it didn't last. But I'm not one to predict. I'm just saying, I think we'll always be there, culturally speaking. Linguistically, I don't think it'll ever be the way it was at one time.
Now, you mentioned one funny thing earlier about sometimes when you're teaching or communicating, you use both English and French and maybe combine the two. And I know one of my French teachers growing up sort of frowned on what she called franglais. And I know the Parisians in France also don't like it when things are Americanized, like le weekend or something like that. But how do you, I mean, it sounds like you've really incorporated that as a teaching method. So tell us a little bit of how you sort of combine English and French.
Actually, I said I write in English and French. I okay. do not teach. In fact, I'm in what is called the native speaker program. Now, when I was a student at St. A's, we had to go to a language lab, you know, where you'd listen to tapes and La Plume de ma tante est sur la table, things like that. Really, you didn't really learn how to speak. I mean, I already knew how to speak, but now the native speaker program has actual native speakers of the language. It's their first language. My first language was French. I learned how to speak French before I learned how to speak English. And so rather than go into a language lab, the students have to spend an hour a week with a native speaker. And that's, we have five different languages besides French. It's Spanish and German and Russian and Chinese. And so when we speak with those people, it's supposed to be only in the language. They get their grammar classes with their grammar professors who will explain the rules in English and all that. But with me, it's exclusively French. I'm known on that campus not as Robert Perrault, but Robert Perrault.
Robert Perrault. C'est bon. Nazi, you know how to pronounce your wife's maiden name now. So you learned something in today's show.
Yep.
Raymond.
Yep. And I want to know. So my wife, she has this place that she goes down to. In Lawrence, Mass, and it's a French bakery, and she gets something called coton. What did I say that right? First off, Robert.
Okay, there are two ways of saying it. That some say garton, and that's G-O-R-T-O-N-S, garton.
Yes.
Some say creton, C-R-E-T-O-N-S, and they're both acceptable. It's a pork spread, and yes. It's very good. I like it.
She loves it. She has to get it from this special place in Lawrence because that's where she grew up. And it's a treat. It's a delicacy. She loves it.
Yeah. My wife makes it, actually.
Wow. So, Nazi, we're going to get Robert Perrault back on
yes.
in the future. And we're going to have your wife on the show, so you pronounce it Arsenault correctly. One of my favorite books, by the way, just switching gears, because you said about writing and reading, was Le Petit Prince. And all my friends in seventh and eighth grade would buy the English translation of that, of The Little Prince. But I actually read it in French, so it was cool. So Franco-American Center is at St. A's. Robert Perreault, thank you for joining me. And we'll have you back on again. And I think it's wonderful that you have a passion for Franco-American studies, getting the culture, maintaining it. And I really believe, you know, there will be a renaissance on this, because one of the things we're trying to do is get the West Side Story out there. So I think this will be part of it. Nazzy, any final words?
You know what? I've got to say thank you to Robert, because you made me appreciate my wife's culture and where she comes from that much more. So, and now my son, because he's, you know, part my wife. So,
well, and I've done my job.
You absolutely have. You've enlightened me. So I like this.
Monsieur Perreault, merci. Nazzy, we'll call it the end.
Okay. Do it again.
Thank you. Très bien. Thank you very much, Robert. And thank you, Tom. And we'll see you next time on the Pulse of New Hampshire, Northeast Delta Dental Radio.